from a private Learjet currently inscribing
Lazy Figure 8
over the sleepy burg of Nashville, Tennessee. It's Scott Merrick with
Leg for the brain.
Hello, y'all. You know there's no Learjet, silly, but I did get the opportunity this morning to drive up the hill south of Nashville to Vanderbilt Dyer Observatory and interview one of my personal heroes, Dr. Rick Chappell. Dr. Chappell serves as director of the observatory and also wears several other, interesting and impressive hats at Vanderbilt University. Give Snacks for the Brain, episode 23, a listen to hear what Dr. Chappell has to say about the state of science, science education, and communication about the sciences in our fair nation. I think it's worth a listen. Heck, if I didn't, I wouldn't be flying around up here.
Very few people understand what's going on in science and technology. We use it all the time, but we have no idea where it comes from. We think you just go buy it at the store. And so, as a result, the public, the American public, is not as excited often about investing in research and technology because they don't know quite what happens with all of that. And so it's really important for there to be effective communication of science and engineering to the public so that they understand the value, they understand the kind of people who do it, and they understand how they do it. What process do you use to create this? And through that understanding, then, there'll be a more reasoned support within the United States for doing these kinds of things.
So, largely at the root of your concern for science communication is a political or economic support from the American public.
Yeah,
is that
it's
true?
Yeah. You know, democracies run based on a knowledgeable electorate, and if people don't know what's going on, they can't vote very effectively on what we should do. And so the voters in America know so little about what we invest in scientific research and exploration, as well as how it's done, that they really can't make good judgments when they go to vote on what we should do. So it's very important for democracy to be made up of people who understand things, very important things like science and technology, which underpin our economy substantially, which is another thing that people don't understand and which needs to be communicated. The idea is that if America invests in science and technology, and I mean spending American dollars on exploration, it causes creative people to go and do things that nobody's ever done before, which means they have to figure out new knowledge and they have to create new machines to do these things. That could be a mission to Pluto. That could be a new accelerator that we never built in the state of Texas, a superconducting supercollider.
Got approved, I think, but never got built.
Approved and then canceled. That could be an investment in deciphering the human genome. It could be anything related to science and engineering. So if we challenge Americans to do these things that nobody's ever done before, talented people will be drawn to this. They will figure out technologies that are required to do these things. These technologies will lead very often to new products, which then create new businesses, which then create new jobs and bring tax money back into the American treasury. So there's this pump that happens through technology that's really important in this country, and yet most people don't even know what's going on. It's also important in terms of balance of trade with other nations. If we're the only nation that has a certain type of technology, then all the other nations in the world have to buy it from us. Once they figure out what we've done and can copy it and make it cheaper, we end up buying it from them. Like in the case of the video cassette recorder, which we invented, used to cost $45,000 when Ampex made it in the United States. And we were the only ones that knew how to do it. And then the Japanese worked on it, worked on it, worked on it until they figured out how to sell them for $300 a piece. Now, we buy all VCRs from Japan. We don't even make those anymore. Like, we don't make color televisions anymore. Like, we don't make stereos anymore because right. they know how to do it more cheaply. So if we're going to stay in this business of selling our things abroad, we're going to have to sell things that other people don't know how to make. And that's technology. And that technology largely comes from an investment on the part of our government in creating exploration challenges that people will then go do and create new knowledge and technology. Now, all of that needs to be communicated well to the public, and it's not. We had the idea several years ago of creating a new major at Vanderbilt in which students who were really good at science and really good at communicating and writing and talking could do an interdisciplinary undergraduate major in arts and science called the Communication of Science and Technology. And they take courses across the board, science, engineering, communications, English, history, political science, so that they are bridge people when they graduate. They understand science, they understand how science is done, and they understand what type of people do science and engineering, and they can communicate that to the great American public that largely does not understand it.
So this program's been going on for several years now. Do you
been
have
going on? Yeah.
Do you have any stellar results from graduates?
Yeah, it's been. We've got about 5 years worth of graduates now, probably a total of 25 graduates. They're doing wonderful things. They work at the interface in American society between science and the public. So there are a lot of jobs there. Like, for example, three of them are in medical school. Wouldn't it be great if your doctor could communicate really effectively to you about a very difficult disease problem that you have? So three of them are in medical school. One of them's at law school at the University of Chicago and going to do medical ethics, which is the right at that interface. Mm-hmm. Some of them are in pharmaceutical sales, communicating fancy medical devices or drugs to people who buy those things. Some are in public health. Public health is about communicating medical science to the public and trying to get the public to do the right thing. So there's a lot of jobs like that they're finding. Some are in management consulting. Some are in journalism, science journalism, which we really need. Most of our journalists don't have backgrounds in science. So it's working extremely well, and we're trying to get the word out about it. Vanderbilt's the only university really that does this type of thing right now.
Here's Vanderbilt being a thought leader again.
I think so, yeah, and I'm very excited about that.
You've been very interested in this topic for years. In 1998, you published a book along with Jim Hartz called Worlds Apart. Can you say a little bit about that experience?
Or? Yeah, I came to this because, I mean, I was in NASA for almost 25 years, and I often gave talks to groups about what NASA was doing in space exploration. And it became obvious to me that mostly the public didn't know. Well, the only thing they knew was what they read in the paper or saw on television, and that wasn't much. And so I thought, you know, Americans are going to be more supportive and understanding of things like space exploration if they understand it better. And so we need to communicate it better. And then former Chancellor Joe Wyatt, whom I had known because I'm a Vanderbilt alum, I had interacted with him. He was very interested in that topic too, and he asked if I would come to Vanderbilt and be at the First Amendment Center and do a study on how can we communicate science to the public more effectively. And Jim Hartz, who's former host of the Today Show, he and I did that together and wrote the book Worlds Apart, which then led to a suggestion of, you know, we need to train some undergraduates to do this, which led to the program then put into place at Vanderbilt.
And that entire book is available online at the First Amendment Center, so I'll link to that in the show notes for anybody who wants to go. I was snooping around in it a little while ago and came up with a quote. In the introduction, you said, "If by habit we come to prefer and demand simple constructions to complex questions, eventually we're bound to get incomplete and ultimately incorrect answers."
Yeah, and it sort of generally happens in reporting now. If your reporter is writing about science and technology, doesn't really understand it very well and doesn't understand the process through which it's created and is a little bit afraid of interacting with this individual who, you know, is a brainiac of some sort. The story that gets written, although it may be an okay story, it'll be very superficial. And it won't give the kind of information maybe that would be good for the voters to have to really understand things well enough to make some decision. We're now making a lot of policy decisions that are based on science and technology in the government, like stem cell research.
Mm-hmm.
There's a whole lot of global warming, a whole lot of things where people really need to understand this a little bit and not just be happy with a superficial understanding.
Caveat coming up.
I might mention one other really, really important area with respect to the country as far as science communication. It has to do with what can we do to change this trend that's been going on for 30-something years where our students in K-12 and in college get worse in science and math every year. I remember Ronald Reagan talking about, we got to do something about this a long time ago.
Not just
and
worse.
And it's not getting any better.
And less interested in science.
So worse and less interested. And it's almost cool sometimes to say, oh, I dropped out of science as soon as I could. Well, that's not cool. And for America, it's definitely not cool because the decisions that these students are making determine whether or not we have a workforce in the future that is technically and scientifically competent. And if we don't, we won't be creating any new technologies in this country. We'll only be doing it with students we can import from China or India or wherever. So you don't want to depend on other countries to deliver you your scientists. Because at some point they're going to start staying home, like the Chinese are starting to go back home after they come over here. We need American students to be interested. Well, if exploration, which is a term I would use interchangeably with science or engineering or technology, if exploration is communicated well to our students, they'll get excited about being explorers, and they'll make career choices that allow the really smart ones to major in science and engineering and do really well and become the future explorers and, more importantly, the future creators of technology in America. If we don't communicate science and exploration well, they'll go do something else. And they'll do something else well. But that means, you know, our pot's going to be empty.
No, 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 no. No empty pots for us. Scientists, science teachers, and science outreach professionals, heed the warning. Ladies and gentlemen, that's all for Snacks for the Brain number 23. As always, visit www.vanderbilt.edu/CSO for more about what the fine people at the Vanderbilt Center for Science Outreach are doing to connect scientists and K-12 students worldwide. See ya!
See ya!